Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Blog Talk Radio, and a good story is a good story with host Marcia Cook and myself, co-host Denise Spooner. We've got a very special guest today, Tracy Slatton. She will be discussing her very successful career as a writer. At the age of only 16, upon completing her junior year of high school, Tracy was accepted at Yale University. At age 20, she graduated with a BA in English. She's received an MFA in creative writing and poetry from Columbia University in 1988. And as part of her spiritual quest, she attended the renowned four-year Barbara Brennan School of Healing, graduating in 1996. Her first novel was Immortal, which was very successful, and her other novels, Fallen and the Botticelli Affair, will be the topic of the discussion today. It's going to be a great show, and we hope that you'll join us. Hey, Marcia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm
so
good.
Glad you're here, Denise. You haven't been here for a while.
I know. Thank you.
I'm so glad I'm on the air because it was pitch black in Chicago, and then I brought up my computers, I brought different phones, I don't know. So hopefully it will be okay. The sun is shining right now, but it's like 100 degrees here, and I know that it's hot in New York, and you're in Phoenix, which you're used to that, right?
Yeah, I'm used to
it. But it's humid. humid. That's what they say, right? All right, and we have a great show today, and this is like a surprise. We have like one guest, which usually I have like 10, you know, there, so Denise is just shocked. But Tracy, she has so much going on, and when I talked to Tracy at first, I mean, this was just going to be her show because she's got a lot going on. She was traditionally published at Random House, which we all know how hard this is, and now she's got two new books coming out, and I read on her, you know, on her site that she's got a movie, you know, option, and I know one thing, that is the hardest thing to get, so, because I do script writing, and we all know that, so this is going to be a great show, and if you want any other information, you can go to www.michiganavenuemedia.com and reach me. And I want to say a couple little things first. Okay, the next show that we have is Virginia's having a show with Clayton Paul Thomas, and that is about his book Tantrums, Troubles, and Treasures. She's had him on before, and she's doing a blog tour for him, and that is on Wednesday on The Writing Mama. Then, that's a guide to parenting. Then on August 2nd, which is on a Tuesday, and that's going to be at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central. We are having William Maltese as the co-host, and Bonnie Clark will be in talking about gourmet food. He's been on before. We have the craziest time ever, and there's no schedule for what we're going to do. We're just going to talk, as always. And then we're going to talk about his new book, Even Gourmets Have to Diet. Okay, and we're going to talk about gourmet food, wine and chocolate, and his 200 novels that he has, which is incredible. And it's going to be really a fun show. And today I want to introduce Tracy. Tracy, hi, Tracy.
Hi, Marcia. Hi, Denise. How's everyone?
We're good.
Hi.
We're all good when we're on. This is when we're on and there's no problems with Black Talk, we're okay. And if one of us drops off, it's not really our fault. People have been dropping off, but we will call back, so we'll still continue to be on, and it will also be on demand. And you can call in 712-242-5259 if you have any questions. Otherwise, you can listen on the phone while you're driving, which is what I do. Okay. Yes, I've done that before. Yeah. And Fran, on Fran Lewis' show, and then I heard her, she said, somebody must be in a car here. Being like, oh, they put me away, quiet me up here because you can hear. But, you know, sometimes you don't go into, I know people when they've called, if you go in and just listen, if you press 1, then you get into the show. If you don't, you can just listen. And that's really good if you just listen. Okay, Tracy, now tell us some, we're going to start with, we won't talk about Fallen first. I think we're going to talk about Immortal because that, I mean, the reviews that you have are unbelievable. And I read all, I mean, they're unbelievable. And you said, I think it's going to be option for a movie. So tell us how you started with this.
Well, Immortal was published in 2008 by Bantam Dell. And Immortal is a rags to riches to burnt at the stake story, and it's sort of the tale of a heart seeking fulfillment
in love and in life. And my main character, Luca, is an orphan boy on the streets of Renaissance Florence, and he doesn't know where he comes from, and he wants to find out, and he's very unusual. He ends up living almost 200 years before he's burnt at the stake. So this story really seems to have struck a chord, and it's been published around the world. It was it's done very, very well in Russia. It was a bestseller in Italy. It's doing very well in Brazil right now. And the movie rights were sold, and Vast Entertainment is in development with Immortal.
That's hard. You know, I mean, I'm a screenwriter, and I've had several, you know, scripts options. It is very hard, especially in a market with millions and millions and millions of books. So this is a great thing. I mean,
you know,
I know
Vast
how hard this is.
Yeah, well, Vast Entertainment, she's very determined to turn it into a movie. Of course, Immortal is a big epic. It's a really big, satisfying, juicy epic about love and loss and the human condition. So, you
and
know,
money.
She says
it costs a lot of money
10
to produce
years,
them.
I'm going
to
get this developed.
Well, it does, but you know what, though? It does take time. You know, I mean, like, because I'm an agent, you know, for screenwriters, and one of the problems is that nobody realizes how long this could finally take to get done. It could take 10 years. It could, and it's not unusual. You have
to
go out and get the money.
Right, that's what she said. Yeah, she says that all these years she's been listening to people say, oh, it took me 8 years, it took me 12 years, now she knows why.
Yeah.
But she's really committed. I'm lucky to be working with Vast Entertainment. They're very committed. You know, they have a lot of integrity. I hear all kinds of horror stories, but
they have
to
really like it. Yeah, they have to like it. You know, and if they really like it, they'll go out and try to do the best they can and try to. It's all about the money. That's what it is. If they can get the money, then it'll work good for you.
Right. Right. Takes time, especially in this market, to fund a big sprawling epic.
Well, that's actually how Michigan Avenue Media got started, because I am really Marcus Bryan and Associates, which is I'm an agent and a writer. But Michigan Avenue, I had an option, and I was going to try and go out and get money. It was optioned. I was going to try and help and get some funds. And then the economy got bad, and then I went, it's not going to happen. I'm a new, you know, production company. It's not going to happen. So. So then it became now with books, and I'm on the radio shows, and I'm doing a lot of different things. So it's media, but that's what it was started for. But it is very hard to get money now because it takes so much. And in your book, yes, epic, it costs a lot to do, but worthwhile
once they get
it done.
What will happen is probably one of these big epics will do well, and suddenly every production company will want, and all the great directors will want another epic yesterday. So,
these things
run in waves.
Right.
So.
See, because people really, period pieces are very expensive. But people really like them. But the production companies know how much it costs. And that's what the hesitancy is, only because of the price. It's not about the story. Because there's people out there that really, you know, well, you can see by the people that have bought your books, that they really like the stories, but getting them into a movie, people think it takes a long time. So it's really quite special that happened. And I'm telling you, because I really know it's not easy. You know,
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it, and it's, you know, it's a good ride, and it's sort of fascinating to watch it happen. And, you know, it's nice because I've got Fall and then the Botticelli Affair out over the last week, and readers are emailing me saying, oh, I like this, and when is the sequel to Immortal coming? Mm-hmm. And I still get a lot of emails about Immortal every week. So it's sort of fun just sort of being on this ride.
Well, sequels, you know.
I'm in the middle of the sequel.
To
Immortal.
Because people really, and if you develop an audience with sequels, that's great. You know, it's characters that you like to write with. And, you know, this is what happens. It becomes very successful. However, you want to talk about why you ended up publishing your own books yourself, and they're beautiful covers. They are, I mean, they're beautiful, you know, and
well,
I think they're going to be great.
Thank you. I think we're in the middle of the biggest publishing revolution since the invention of the Gutenberg Press. And by the way, the Gutenberg Press came in, and there was initially a lot of resistance to it, especially among the elite classes. They said no educated man would ever, you know, buy a coarse-printed book. They're too crude and coarse. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we know how that ended up.
Yep.
But the Gutenberg Press put an entire class of people out of work within a generation, and that was scribes. Mm-hmm. because there was a huge industry of copying scrolls and copying manuscripts, which died within a generation. So, and here we are now with the ebook and print on demand, and it is radically and fundamentally changing the system, which is great
for people
like me. In a
really good way, in a great way.
Well, the old system is broken. The old system is broken and it isn't working. It takes too long for a publishing house. If you submit to a traditional publishing house, it takes them too long to read it. It takes them too long to take it from manuscript to book form. It takes at least a year to get it from
a
manuscript.
That means
that the publishing company is not responding to the marketplace fast enough. It does not surprise me that the big publishing companies, Random House, Bertelsmann, is doing so badly. And by the way, Random House is really screwing a lot of authors in terms of their advances. They're playing a lot of games with advances. We'll give you a little bit now and a little bit the first quarter after this, and the second quarter after that you get a little more, and they're playing a lot of games. They are foundering. The old system is broken. It doesn't work. Yep. They don't respond to the marketplace fast enough. They aren't creative enough.
Right.
These publishing companies, the traditional publishing companies, are run by groupthink and by committee mind. And it isn't editors choosing books anymore. It is the marketing department is choosing books. And the marketing department cares about marketing. They don't care about stories. They care about marketing. So they're looking for a story that's an exact replica of the Da Vinci Code so they can sell it to a billion people. And they're trying to create an algorithm so that every single novel they publish is a bestseller out of the gates. And because of that, they are not interested in mid-list authors. They are not interested in developing an author's career through the mid-list into selling more and more copies and building a readership. I think they're making really fundamental mistakes. They have these old-school rules which simply don't apply. For example, when I wrote Fallen, sent it around, it almost got bought a bunch of places, and it didn't get bought. I had the same thing with the Botticelli Affair, almost got bought a bunch of places, didn't get bought. And they were radically different responses. And I decided I was going to publish it myself, and I contacted a friend of mine who had a pretty, a decent novel, which was sort of a romance novel. It was lit, what they call it, chick lit. It was a little different from anything I've written, but I said to her, she's a friend, so I said, hey, will you give me a quote for the cover of Fallen? She said, oh, no, because they're such different genres. And I said, okay, that's fine, she's a friend, but I thought, well, how stupid can you be? If it's on the back of my novel, even if it's a different genre, it doesn't just help me, it helps her, because it keeps the reading public looking at her name and her novel.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, the old school publishing companies run by these old, they're dinosaurs. They're fossilizing in front of our eyes. They're run by these old school, dilapidated rules that some MBA dreamt up.
I want to interject one thing because I really want people to listen to what you're saying, but I have to say one really, really big thing. The big thing, the part that you're saying, all of this is true. And, tell people how many books you really sold. I mean, you didn't sell 5 books, okay? So I want you to say how successful your book has been, Immortal.
Immortal has done very, very well.
And
it wasn't a bestseller here in the U.S. It was a bestseller. It briefly made the bestseller list in Italy, and my Italian publisher
But you sold
me,
a lot of copies
money.
Of books.
I sold a lot of copies. I did extremely well. I did better than they ever expected. And they didn't buy the sequel, but at that time, Random House was going through huge upheaval.
But see,
a lot of
people
were
fired. Because sometimes they might say these things, but you were doing well, okay? So, see, that's the thing. You're doing well, and now you've got an option. And so, this is what I've been like.
Lack of imagination. These publishing companies are terrified of taking risks.
Yes.
They're looking for an algorithm to recreate a bestseller every single time. It's not going to work. Not going to worry. They have no imagination. They're run by committee mind and groupthink.
They don't know. Look, the same thing in movies, okay? I see movies every week because I write movies. And I'm thinking to myself, I go to a movie, I sit there. There's not that many people in the audience. Some of these movies are really bad. Why aren't they changing? I mean, let's move on. What I think needs to happen is actually going to happen. The part now that's going to be good for everybody is everybody's kind of on the same playing field, because when you have an ebook, you are right out there with all the bestseller people, And everybody is getting a chance to get out there. Look, there are books that are bad. There are movies that are bad. However, there's not going to be the distinction between traditionally published and self-published. See, self-publishing, they think that it's like, they go, oh, they sound like you're gluing the book together. It's not like that. You do a beautiful cover. It's edited. The work looks good. Yeah, there are some people that are not doing
it
professionally.
Well, there are a couple of things. I went with a company called Telemachus Press, and they've done all the conversion for me to do Telemachus Press. They've been wonderful. They do the conversion of my Word document into all the appropriate files for Nook and for Kindle, and also it's going to be print on demand, so people will be able to get printed books. But there's a couple of things you have to do as a writer going it without the big traditional companies. One is, this is not optional. You must hire a manuscript editor.
Yeah,
I did.
Right, exactly.
Everyone did. Nobody writes a perfect manuscript out of the gate. So you must hire, you must spend the money. It's part of your investment.
Yep.
Second thing you must do, you must hire a copy editor. This is separate from a manuscript editor. Copy editor, because I went to two Ivy League schools, I've got comma problems, I've got a that which problem. Sometimes I use that when I should use which, and I use which when I should use that. So you must hire a copy editor.
Yes.
The third thing is you must do, I think, you must invest in a PR firm, because people cannot buy your books if they don't know they're there. So you find someone reputable who will help you, especially with Internet PR, because everything's
that's
on
the
web now.
Right. And
then
there's a lot of people that are not honest. They really have to research where they're going.
Yeah,
because
there's a lot of bad PR firms out there. I've been lucky, but there's
plenty
of people to take your money and do nothing. But I've been lucky. I mean, I'm working with FSB Associates, and they're doing a great job there. We just got it geared up because the book just got up live on Amazon. The other thing I did was I hired a small firm in the UK called Black Sheep Design, and they did the covers, and they just did beautiful covers for me.
Absolutely beautiful.
Stunning covers. So,
see, what I'm doing now with
if you're going to self-publish.
But are you really the publisher? Because, see, that's one of the things now. You did all of the work because you got the editor. I mean, you do it all. That's really what self-publishing is, or publishing it with small independence, it's just the same as traditional. It's just that you take time to find the cover, the right artist. I mean, there's a lot that you do, and you make sure that the book
Well, let me tell you a couple of things that are going on that I don't like about what's going on. There's an e-book,
I just want you to say
e-book
one more
revolution.
Thing. What is FSB? FSB is in...
FSB Associates, they're an internet publicity firm based out of New Jersey. They work very closely with a lot of the publishing houses. They work with independent authors. They're wonderful. I've just FSB Associates. They're great.
Okay, that's good.
But let me say two things that are going on. So here we are in the midst of this e-publishing revolution, the biggest change in 500 years in book publishing. And it will only grow. You know, May when Amazon said in May that for every 100 traditionally printed books they sold 105 e-books. So this is great. A couple of things that are happening that are not so cool. One is that literary agents are becoming not only just being agents, they're also trying to become publishers. And what they're saying to authors is, well, we tried to sell your book, we couldn't, we'll publish it, you're going to pay us, we're going to publish it, and the e-book, on Amazon, CreateSpace probably, and that's what we'll do. We'll get it out there, and we'll be your publishers. This is a conflict of interest. It is not ethical for literary agencies to be publishers. Separation of church and state. Any literary agent, just a minute, any literary agent who says to someone, oh, I tried 15 publishers, no one's buying your book, but I'm going to publish it, you give me money. And then some of these agents are also charging. They're putting a surcharge on and making money off the author.
I have to interrupt you. I have to interrupt you because I got to say one thing. Okay, I am an agent. Okay, and I do not publish books for people. Okay, however, I try to get them, and I'm not even taking clients anymore with the books because there's nothing I can do for them anymore, because actually they're not getting published. They're not going to get published. I don't care who they are. It just doesn't work. I mean, I've done this for 18 years. It does not work anymore. The system is broken. Like you said, it doesn't work, okay? But what they need to know is they have to have somebody to guide them. I have done this for 18 years. I send them to a place, and they go somewhere else, and they get ripped off. And this drives me insane, okay? That's the problem. Maybe because, see, I am an agent, but I'm a writer. Okay, so I don't even I consider myself a writer before anything else. And what I'm concerned about is that someone like me who says, I had my books done at so-and-so, and if I tell them that because I know they're not going to get ripped off, then they go somewhere else and they get ripped off. That's the bad thing.
Well, you can't save people from themselves, Marcia. You
can't
save anyone
problem.
From themselves.
I know. I know. This is a problem for me. But as long as you brought this up, that's why like I have to tell people this. You have to make sure that you're going to the right place. I have seen people over the years have the worst-looking books, and they've paid a fortune. But on the other end, then what they do is, when even to buy their own books, it's too much money.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to watch. They have to pay attention.
Well, I've been lucky with Telemachus. They go through Lightning Source. Now, that's the second thing.
Good.
I want to say the second disgusting thing that is happening, and I probably shouldn't say this because now I'm calling
you
on
Amazon. You
can
say whatever you want. You could say whatever you want. But I'm going to...
Okay, I'm
going to
tell you, Amazon is doing something I don't think they should do. They've gotten into a little fight with CreateSpace is an arm of Amazon. And Amazon's gotten into a little fight with Lightning Source. Lightning Source makes a really good product.
Yes.
I think they use better paper than CreateSpace does. And they have a big footprint, a bigger footprint, because they're Ingram's, and they feed everyone. They feed Amazon, and they feed Barnes & Noble. So they feed everyone.
Right.
They feed Apple. So Lightning Source makes a great product, a better product than CreateSpace, and they feed everyone. They have a bigger footprint. Amazon has started doing this thing where when the printed on-demand, the POD books, are available for an author, and it's not on every author, it's on a few authors, but they're kind of being bitchy with Lightning Source. They're saying... They're putting the books up and saying, not available for 2 weeks or something. They're making it look as if the printed books are not immediately available when they absolutely are.
Right.
And Amazon is trying to protect CreateSpace. So, and it's not ethical on Amazon's part. They
should not
be doing that to Lightning Source.
CreateSpace used to be Book Surge. Because that's what that was. Book Surge was a part of Amazon. That was when they first started doing it. I had done a book search. They did a good job on the book. Then they went to CreateSpace, and I already had gone somewhere else. Okay, but the fact is that people don't realize it does matter. The paper, the cover, the way it looks. That's the thing that they have to watch. Okay, because not
well. What
everybody...
I have heard over and over again is if you order the same book from CreateSpace and from Lightning Source. You put the two books out on your table overnight. You come back the next morning. The CreateSpace book is all curled up. The paper is not as good. The production values at CreateSpace are not yet, and I think I've heard that they're fixing it, but they are not yet as good as the production values at Lightning Source.
I just don't think
Amazon should be treating Lightning Source this way. I think it's not good.
Well,
I think
among the industry, though, what's going to happen now is – like, that's going to be a little chaotic only because this, like, I had ebook traditional publishers on, like, last year, and they were going, oh, it's going to take, you know, like, 5 years before everything goes to the way they should be, and, you know, but it went crazy with the iPad, and all of this went insane, and it happened so fast that they can't even keep up. But this is so good for authors. I am, like, static. I am so...
It's like in the music industry, instead of having these gatekeepers who are determined to only let a few people in, you get gate openers. That's what the reading public deserves.
See, I've been through, like, the mill, and I am so happy that you are saying this because this is so important. And the most important thing is because you are a published writer from the Random House. You know, you are from the press.
Well, let me tell you something else about the traditional publishing houses. the PR team at Bantam House sucked. They were terrible. They did everything they could to actively thwart my efforts to sell copies of my book, Immortal.
See, I happen to
they
look at
the, terrible.
You know, when you go online and you see, like, Random House, they don't have the picture of the book. I noticed that today. Today and yesterday. What I do is I go, I'm always looking around at everybody's work, you know, and where they are and how the PR is going. And I noticed that that site was very barren. And you have so much going on in your life that you've done that looks like you've not done anything. So if somebody just sees something, you know, you have a lot really going, and your covers are gorgeous. Everything looks good, and you are really out there. To now have to do all this, it's really a shame. They did only because, but it's probably in your best interest now, because you're right. There's so much more you can do yourself. You know, and you really can do a
right.
lot.
Well, if you do, you have to do it intelligently, as you were
yes.
pointing out. You have to be careful you don't get ripped off. And then,
yes.
you know, I think that there's a lot of self-publishing used to have a worse name. It's going to change a lot because
yes. Yes, it
you know, the big publishing companies, the traditional publishing companies, the system is broken. They are dinosaurs fossiling in front of our eyes. They don't know what they're doing. They're working
right.
on old school rules that some, you know, brain dead MBA thought up that simply aren't true. People said things to me, people at Random House, when I presented, my former agent presented to them the sequel to Immortal, they said things like, women don't buy books with male main characters, which was totally untrue. They also said things to me about Immortal like, only women will buy Immortal.
Women are the women
just,
buy books more than men altogether.
Of
there's
course,
more women
but
buying
it
books,
isn't only women.
Book.
It isn't only women who buy and
no.
read books. So many men emailed me about Immortal. It's just they... Like the
yes.
old marketing rules that the traditional companies want to invest in don't work, are no longer true,
you're right.
are falling
you're
by the wayside, and there are all
yes.
these opportunities. You know, but in order to make your books look decent, you must get the manuscript edited by a professional editor
Absolutely.
Who knows what they're
okay, you
doing.
You know what you said before?
That's the story.
Okay, you know what you said is, well, this is what I found. Okay, Denise, are you on the line?
Yep, I'm here.
Denise? Okay, Denise, okay, what we decided with all the, you know, that we've had all these authors on and people talking. Now, like, everybody needs to have more than one editor. You said a copy editor, whatever, and you know, need another editor, and I agree with you on that because, you know what, first when Denise, remember, you want to say what happens to the books? When you look, say, Denise wanted to do, and she does do, the first part where she cleans it up. Denise, do you just want to talk about that just a minute? So, because this is really part of the conversation that's important.
Yeah, I just found different authors of the work that I was looking at for them. A lot of them, you know, I mean, a good writer doesn't just because you're a good writer doesn't necessarily mean you have, you know, a BA in English or something like that, where you can be grammatically correct and have good
right.
sentence structure and good content. So I just do first draft editing where they can, you know, the writer can just concentrate on their piece and write to the heart's content. And then I clean it up, send it back to them. And that way, it doesn't spend so much time with an editor that they're going to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on.
Right.
It spends, you know, a lot less time there. They have a lot less cleanup work. And often when I send the draft back to them, when I've just done the first draft editing, I'll go in a little bit more than that developmentally, but I
yeah.
try and just say first draft. When I do that, often I'm hearing back from different authors right now that it's actually clearing their mind to write more.
See, that's right. Yeah.
They get jumbled up on some of their, they knew that there was typos, there was errors and stuff in it, and they would lose sight of where they were going. And when I gave it back to them more cleaned up version, they were actually able to write more. So it's exciting to see that.
Are you going to still be doing this now?
Yep, yep.
Okay, do you want to tell them your website where they can go? Because, I mean, this is, they need to do, go to one person first, right? I've seen people like they need almost three people, you know, and it really is. It has to be edited right. And Tracy's saying exactly what I always say. So do you want to give your where they can reach you?
Yeah,
for the cleanup.
My reviews with integrity. WordPress.com www.
Okay.
Reviews with integrity.
Or you can also come to me and I'll get to Denise. But see,
sure.
That's right. See, Tracy, I mean, see, this is what is really, we found it is true. You're absolutely right on the money because, you know, you really need to have it done. The editing has to be pristine.
Nobody writes a perfect novel out of
exactly.
the gate. It just doesn't
exactly.
happen.
Exactly.
It just doesn't happen. You know, it's just, You have to spend the money. You have to be willing to do the work. I did five revisions. I mean, I had a brilliant editor at Bantam for Immortal. She was brilliant. She's amazing.
Yeah.
I did five edits for her. Yeah. Five. And
it's
I think that any novelist has to realize.
Although
any,
you have a lot of pages.
Writer,
you have a very long book.
I have a long book. It was twice as long. She cut it. She cut it a lot, you know.
So tell everybody how many pages. 500?
What
is it? 500?
512 or something, yeah.
Okay. That's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah, I had, you know, I had a lot of story to tell that
That's
I wanted
right.
to tell. And
right. Right. But
so you have to do
editing.
That. You have to do, like, the kind of, you have to get the story right, and that's separate from getting the grammar
exactly.
right. And
exactly.
you have to have the grammar right because it's too disconcerting and distracting for it to be
right.
bad.
Right.
Your book has to
right.
look professional.
Exactly.
Right. And we all make mistakes because sometimes when we're writing, we don't realize that we've said it again, you know, in another way. And it has to be cleaned up first. Then it has to go to editing. Then you got to recheck it. I mean, even in a script, I've mentioned this on the show before. I can do a script is usually no more than 120 pages. Okay, and I write romantic comedies, whatever. And I have been known, I could do one page, like if I don't like the word, 15 times. I don't care. I got to get the right word because you don't have as much time as you do in a novel. You have to get every word, and it means in a script it means something because you're not really giving the description of a book. So you got to make it right. And I mean, people just think you just sit there and can get it. It doesn't. This is a big process to do. I mean,
it's
but you got to be determined. You have to want.
And everyone thinks they can write a book. Everyone thinks they can write a book. And maybe most people can, but they got to be willing to work, you know?
I guess,
that's
you know what?
Line.
They can't. They can't. They really can't. And I was always telling everybody to do it, to keep going. But you know what? They really can't because if you're writing just for money, they should stop right now. You can't. It's not about, you can't. It's not, it doesn't. Everybody wants to make money. But if you're writing just for money, give it up because it's not happening.
Right. It's got
to
be your passion. It's got to be the thing that you live for.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is, like you're saying, I can hear that you're, like, really excited about this, and I am thrilled. This is the best it ever was for new writers, ever. They can really get out there now, and they can really go somewhere.
Well, the old guard, you know, and it's interesting because I talk to a lot of different literary agents and I have friends who are editors at major
yeah.
publishing houses. Just really interesting to hear because some people, there's the old guard who just doesn't want to get it how much of a change
yeah.
we're in for.
They,
then
right,
there's the new guard,
right.
and I like to think I'm in that, you know, the sort of the front runners of let's move ahead, huge opportunities
oh,
yeah. for people
oh, absolutely.
Who are creative and pathologically persistent. Let's
right.
do it. And then there's people kind of in the middle, and they're not flexible enough yet, but they kind of are starting to grasp it. But really, the last time we had a change like this was 500 years ago when the Gutenberg Press was
right.
invented.
Okay.
This is
there
we
you
are
go.
Entering a new world of
Absolutely.
Media, a new
Absolutely.
World, and it is thrilling.
I love it. And, you know, see, this is the thing about, like, the radio shows. See, I know, like, a lot of people, yeah, we come on, we talk about books, whatever, but because this message, and because you feel so strongly about it, that's why I'm thrilled, is that this is really what's happening now. This is the new way to go. This is life. They have to move on, and they're not, okay? And they need to. They have to move
yeah.
on because everybody else is moving on, and they're going to be behind. And they are. Actually, they are behind.
Well, like
and
I
now
found it because
there.
I've done so well. I've done so well with Immortal internationally. I knew that some of the international publishers would be interested in my new novels.
Yeah.
And yeah. so I started talking to agents, literary agents, and say, "Hey, do you want to just handle foreign and subsidiary rights for these two books?"
Yeah.
And you know, some of the and it's really interesting how inflexible. And then, look, they're really well-respected, and of course they don't want some of these very fancy, famous, respected literary agencies, you know, who can call an editor and have a book read immediately. That's great. But they are so old guard because they were so
Well, pretty
so
soon they won't be able to call anybody and get a book read. So they'll have to figure out what
else to do. It won't matter. Pretty soon it won't matter.
Right.
You won't need the big traditional publishing companies.
That's
the
why
point is
agents.
We can open the gates, you know.
The gates are open
and there'll
now.
Be new ways to tell which ones
yeah.
are the good ones. We won't be forced to read the direct that the traditional
that's
publishing
right.
companies keep
You're
forcing
right.
on us.
And
I mean,
you know,
I read everything. I read everything. I go out and I consider it market research, and I read all the popular authors. I read literature. I read popular authors. I read self-help books. I read nonfiction. You name it. I'm willing to read anything. I love to read. I read all the time. It's my market research. But the bestsellers right now, most of these writers are terrible. They are terrible writers. But they fit into a few very specific genres that have been anointed by the traditional publishing companies.
Yes.
There is the suspense novel. You know, there is the mystery novel. There is the vampire novel. There is the romance novel. Okay, so you've got your little, you know, these specific things, and so many of them are so badly written, and they lack creativity.
They have no creativity.
There's very little creativity in the traditional publishing house because they're looking for an algorithm to get a bestseller every time, and it's not going to happen.
You know, unfortunately, it's the same with movies. Okay, because this is what they do. They go, oh, you know what? You'll send them, like, a whole bunch of log lines to read, and they go, you know, it just doesn't jump off the page, and, you know, it's not looking right. And I'm saying, like, this is two sentences, okay? Read the script, because if – it's not that easy to write a comedy in one sentence and then go, oh, yes, we'll take it's jumping off the page. What jumps off the page is when the producer, the director, the actors, the writer all get together and they make a good movie, which is what we need to do. And hopefully that's going to happen. Because all of the people that do books, a lot of them, I mean, there's a lot of really good books that can be scripts, but they got to work on all of this together. They got to get everybody, they can't just look at the synopsis and go, oh, you know, I don't know if this is going to make it. You never know. And they have, that's why they got all these sequels coming out of movies that people, but the problem is, see, they're making a lot of money. So once they make a lot of money, then they go, okay, it's time to do number 20, a sequel, you know.
Right, well, they beat the dead horse. So, you know,
that's
same thing with traditional publishing.
And
but you know what? It's such a huge investment in movies. It's millions and millions and millions in a movie, and it's only, you know, I mean, I put a few thousand into doing these books. So the investment in movies is much, much bigger.
Oh,
but
it is.
Then, so, you know, I can understand why they're risk averse. It's the risk-reward analysis they're doing. So, you know, with movies, I can kind of get it. One wishes they had more, you know, imagination and we weren't seeing the same stupid comic book movies over and over again. I don't know. You know, I don't know how to change that system. But at least with books.
You know how to change it?
At least with books, it's cheaper.
You know, but you know, this is changing now. That's the thing. See, right now, what you and I are doing, and Denise, well, we're all out here now. This is what we're talking about. And this, we do very well on archives. People are listening. And, you know, these are the elements that are necessary for change because we're in the change. It's not like you're not like going to think about if we're going to be changing. We are changing. It is. And
yeah, we're in the midst of it. This is the change.
This is
the Gutenberg press coming in.
This is it. And, you know, and I honestly, the way that these publishers have treated people with, okay, I'm an agent, a WGA agent with the signatory with the Writers Guild, okay? They'll send me, like when I was sending books out or whatever, they'll say, oh, dear author, we're sorry, we can't, you need to get an agent. I'm going like, have you looked up WGA? My name is there, Marcus Bryan and Associates, okay? I am not the author, okay? They don't even care.
There's a very small, insular group of agents in Manhattan that have any pull with editors.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was starting to say how inflexible they are. I was talking to people, trying to find an agent who will handle, because within 24 hours of me putting up the covers of Fallen on my blog talk, my French editor emailed me and said, I want to read this. And I want an agent to submit to him. So I'm looking for an agent saying, I have a request from a foreign editor. And still, these old school literary agencies are like, oh, we can't do it that way. We absolutely can't just handle your foreign rights. It's like, well, why the hell not? You know, what do you have to lose?
Right, they don't want to do that. See, one of the things is what, you know, and see, that's the thing. See, the thing about it, we were talking about before, I just would like to explain one thing. What they do is, okay, the rule started where an agent shouldn't make any money until you sell. Okay. Now.
Right, and that's why agents should not be in the publishing business. Separation
okay,
of church
not,
and state.
But they're not.
Agents,
really, you know right.
I know a number of the big literary agencies in New
right.
York who are now also e-publishing. They should
yeah.
not be doing it.
No,
it's unethical.
Right. I'm
business.
Not a publisher. Exactly. You're right. Okay, and the worst part is, I mean, at least even if I was, I have like 6 books already, and I've been doing this for years. Okay, at least I know what I'm doing. But I use Fidelity Publishing, and they... You know, she does a very beautiful book because I see a lot of books come in here. They look, you're right, they look bad. I mean, they really do. They look bad. They don't have, they just don't have like what, they have all, some things missing, you know. I mean, they don't have like an a page with, you know, anything. They don't have a page that says anything, you know, about, you know, maybe if they want to do acknowledgments. They don't have anything, okay. It's just like there, okay, because some of the self-publishers do not make a book look good. They do whatever you write
yeah.
in there is what it is. Okay, Fidelity, she does. She goes right for it, and she helps you out if you want it. A lot of authors, they got their own deal, so that's what happened there. What happened is a lot because people are paying people, they think that they are publishers, and they're not. Okay, so they make mistakes, and they're not listening. Okay, and that's one of the other problems. And see, an agent, okay, the new agent, which I'm not going to do because I. Needs to be more like management. You've got to manage their careers because they'll have none, okay? Because what the new agent has to do is say, like, you know what? I cannot help you right now. I'm going to send you to somebody, get your book made. If you want me to represent the book to movies, I can get it to production companies because that's what I do. But the thing is, we don't make any money till anybody sells. And the problem is, unfortunately, most people won't sell. They're not going to sell their scripts to production houses because unless the money loosens up, because once you have one production company, they have to go out and get more involved because it's so expensive. So, I mean, all along the board, nobody wants to really work. And this, you know, this takes a lot of work. And I have done this for years, and I'm willing to work. I'm up like till 3 in the morning. And the fact of the matter is, people like you that are out there, this is fabulous because you're out there talking about it, not as a person that just hasn't sold any books, hasn't done anything. You are a person that's really out there and working in it. And that's what people have to realize, that even if they went to random, wherever they went, Scholastic, wherever, they still have to help themselves get out there. You want to talk
right.
a little bit about marketing because you know about
right.
it.
Right. No, even if someone, one of the big companies buys your, say, Martin's Press, Random House, someone buys your book, you know, especially a first time, unless they're buying your book for $250,000, do not count on their PR team to do anything for you. The
right.
PR teams,
right.
you know, I don't understand. If the big traditional publishing houses want to make money, the first thing they can do is fire all their PR staff and outsource it all because these people are doing nothing. Literally, the PR team at Random House, they actively thwarted my efforts to sell copies. They could not have been more obstructive if they'd tried. They went out of their way to thwart my efforts to sell copies of Immortal. It was, you know, and luckily the agent I had at the time said to me before the book came out, he said, Tracy, you are not going to be happy with what they do for you. Go hire some people. Here's
yep.
a list of names.
Yep. Yep.
And,
yep.
you know, that
yep.
was the best
right.
advice I got.
Right, and that's what I'm trying to do for people. I'm trying to help them. You know, they need to have a video done, and, you know, World of Ink Network, you know, we were doing radio shows before with, like, Red River, and now, but I'm with World of Virginia, and I are the two people that are running World of Ink Network, okay, our radio shows. Now, Virginia, she does a wonderful trailer. See, those are things that they need to do. So I'm trying to tell people, like, go to Virginia. Don't go and pay $2,000 for a video that is going to be not even what you want. And it's $2,000. You could get it for less money with someone you know is good. See, this is the job that I do now. You know, and
who do you know for the videos? Because I want to do a video
Virginia, she does it in the World of Ink Network.
Yes,
just go right on. Yeah, Virginia Grenier. I'll give you. Email you. Yeah, Grenier.
Email me. Okay.
I will. Yeah.
So, you know, and any author putting a book has to figure out ways to promote their book.
Yeah,
and
she does.
PR
very
is
good.
The art of making your work relevant. to what's going on now. At some point, I do want to talk about my book. So, although
I know that's what I'm saying. I know.
Talk about publishing all day long.
That's why I said. But I know the reason. Because when we talked the first time, I just went like, well, they will buy your books because they're good. Okay, and so now that we got that all out of the way here, which we did. Okay, now because I knew what you know, I didn't realize what you were going to say, but I knew we were talking about this. But you have said exactly, and Denise knows this is what I say every time. You have done a great job. I'm telling you, and that's why you're successful, because you know what you're doing. All right, now let's talk about your books and what. And I definitely want to have you on again because I mean I knew, and that's why I said to Denise today, I have one guest today. I think she's probably shocked, but I know you've done a lot of your research and you know all of this, and this is why, because you're successful. That's it. And probably Virginia and I are having a show, which is a new one we're starting in August. It's called What Is Success. So I think that'd be a good show for you to come on.
I'd love to come on. That sounds fun.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that'd be good. It's brand new.
It's a multidimensional thing.
See, right. That's what I said. Let's do a show on this because it's not always about money. It's about other things. So now let's talk about your books and how good they are. Okay, look, talk about whatever you want now. It's all yours.
Okay, well, I'll tell you and our listeners about Fallen.
Okay.
So Fallen is a dystopian romance. So it's this love story that happens after the world has ended, basically. And kind of, you know, for me when I write a story or a novel, the stakes have to be really high. So I'm always asking myself, what are the stakes? And then there's something I'm always addressing. In my mind, good fiction, all good fiction has the same origin. And that origin is all good fiction is an argument for a value. What is the value? So in Romeo and Juliet, the value is love conquers all. And the story is an argument in support of that value. And in Immortal, my first novel, Immortal, the value is that love is the only immortality we can know. And the secondary value, which I was also arguing for, is that art is redemptive. So for example, in Immortal, you can say love is the only immortality we can know, and you can say art is redemptive, or you can show this orphan boy on the streets, and he's getting raped, and the thing that saves his soul is he's thinking about Giotto's frescoes. So it's much more powerful to show this kid having this horrible experience, and he retains his inner core essence by, you know, sort of astrally sending himself and imagining himself with Giotto's fresco. So then you think, yeah, art's redemptive. You know, so every fiction, every piece of good fiction is an argument for a value. Then in my mind, all fiction shares two commonalities. One is fiction tells the truth. And I'm not talking about facts. This is fiction tells the truth. Then the other part of good fiction is it is created by obstacle and conflict. So that's my little speech on fiction, what makes fiction work.
And the thing, I mean, you actually know what you're doing here. And I think we have a caller in there, but I want you to...
Okay, so let's ask the caller.
Okay,
let's
Denise,
have a caller on.
Do we have a caller?
Yeah, I'm trying to get over to him right now.
Yeah.
Hang on one second here.
I think I know who that is.
Here. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
hello,
Bennett.
Lady.
Hi.
Bennett.
I'm sorry, I'm late. It's called
Bennett.
Work.
Okay, Bennett, meet Tracy.
I've met Tracy once before, and the lovely thing about meeting Tracy is she's such a beautiful woman, and she writes so well.
Oh, thank you.
And she didn't even pay me enough to say that.
I don't have it.
Okay,
Bennett,
tell her what you do. Tell her what you do.
I'm a writer and critic at Amazon. I also write for Affaire de Cour, Night Owl, and Piece of the Page, Audio World.
Wow.
I don't do anything. I'm lazy. I was in an editor's meeting for a magazine, so I don't do nothing. I sit around and twiddle my thumbs all day.
Yeah, Bennett is a frequent visitor, which we enjoy very much. Bennett, what did you want to ask Tracy? I know you might. I know you do.
I love your work, and I love what you were saying about truth. Okay? Now, what I will ask you is, do you find, as a storyteller, that you have a... Excuse me if I'm a little... I just got off of a meeting, so you'll have to pardon me if I'm a little slow today. When as a storyteller and you find the truth, is there sometimes do you get your facts not messed up, but sort of like messed with your fiction?
You know, that is a great question. And in my fiction, if I have a choice between truth and fact, I will always choose truth. Yeah. Always. Fact is malleable. Truth, can't mess with it. But that is a great question. That is an awesome question.
Right. Yeah, but that's why Bennett is good. I mean, Bennett has been around. He knows all of the things that really matter in books. You know, he really does, you know.
Yeah.
And he always comes up with these greatest questions. And, you know, the thing is, yes, you know this, and that's why you're so successful. Bennett, did you hear the part where she's now doing her own books?
Yes, and I wish she'd send me a few.
Well, she will.
You can email me. I'll make sure you get review copies. Yes. Email me or send some. Make sure I get your email address. I'll get you two together.
Two to one.
My social secretary, Marcia, here will help.
Yeah, oh, yes, very much. I will do it.
I'm kidding. Don't hit me.
I'm a bit, you know this already. I'm very mothering type. Okay. All right. I'll give Tracy your address if that's okay with you.
That's wonderful.
Okay, fine.
That's wonderful.
Okay.
Bennett, do you have more questions? I love your questions.
Yes, I do. I have a beautiful question, and I asked this in the last Author Write Table at Night Owl. And I'm going to ask the two questions that are in the Night Owl, my columns on Night Owl. Tracy, when did you consider yourself a writer?
I don't know if there was a moment. That's a good question, too.
I knew you two would like each other
because I emailed Bennett separately with the link. I knew that you would get along fabulously.
You know, when do I consider myself a writer? You know, it's like yoga. It's like I have a practice of yoga, and some days I can do, you know, Parvita Trikonasana where I'm twisted in the triangle pose, and some days I can't. And it's, I went last night. I took myself to see Midnight in Paris. Of course, you know, Hemingway is in the movie, and Hemingway totally nailed it. Writers were awful, miserable people. I loved the movie, and
I mean,
and I walked out feeling so competitive with Hemingway, and it's like, I in all likelihood, I will never get to the status of a Hemingway, and it made me totally just like filled with this kind of riled up feeling, and it's like,
if I compare
myself to Hemingway, well, I don't think I can call myself a writer. But if I compare myself to where I was 15 years ago, maybe I am a writer. So
I'm going to say this to you, Tracy. If you ever say that you don't consider yourself in the same category as Hemingway, I will slap your wrist.
Because we're all writers.
Success. You may not get the success Hemingway did, and he got most of his success after his death.
Right.
So
exactly.
we want you to get the success now, not wait till you're dead.
Yeah. No,
I'm sorry.
I like success now.
You know, Bennett,
he changed the world. He changed literature. It's not just like the success. It was like his impact on prose was profound.
I love the movie. I mean, I saw it too. And you know what? It's a Woody Allen movie, and, you know, people should actually go and see it. And I was actually going to – I might be doing some reviews, but I wonder – because, you know what? It's a really, really good movie, and writers especially. I mean, you know, after we got off the show, I said to my husband, I always did say, you know, well, that's what happens to writers. I don't drink. I probably should. But writers – that's why people get – they drink, because Hemingway – I mean, it's like you see these people, they weren't even secure with their own – they didn't know then. See, that's the thing. So what you're saying now is – 80 years from now, someone will look at your literature, and you may be what you think you want to be, and you are already.
Okay.
God,
I hope so. Mere lips to words, eyes. Let's say this. There's an author and a poet named Edgar Allan Poe. He died at 42 of consumption. Okay? But the thing is, if you say today Edgar Allan Poe, everybody remembers The Raven, everybody remembers Annabelle Lee.
The Cat of Amontillado.
Yep.
Exactly, a lot of his stuff, but he wrote his stuff almost 200 years ago, and he's immortal just as much as Hemingway is. Twain, 100 years ago, but still, it's the idea that you know, if you say, oh yeah, I'm gonna be as famous as Hemingway, yeah, 20 years, 30 years, we may see you.
Yeah, because what happens is nobody knows it while it's happening. You just don't. I mean, that's, look at Woody Allen.
Well, I have a big appetite for I have a big appetite for writing. I want to write 100 books. I don't know if I'll get there before, you know, I keel over. They're going to have to peel my cold, dead fingers off my keyboard, you know, and drag me to my grave. But I just am so hungry to write novels.
I'm so happy about
e-publishing.
See, I haven't had anybody on like you. I have not had anybody on that feels like you do. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because as soon as we talked, I mean, because you absolutely love what you're doing, and you're really passionate about it, and I am too. So I will go, I will keep going and keep going. I don't care, because I really love it. And see, that's the thing. That's why I'm saying to people, you really have to love this. You can't go like, oh, good, I'm going to pay my rent tomorrow because I'm writing. That's not happening. Forget that.
Oh, my husband, you know, my husband is a classical figurative sculptor, Sabin Howard. And when the day we met, the first time we talked, we started talking, he was talking about art and being a sculptor, and I started talking about writing. And he looked at me as I'm talking about writing. He said, oh, you have it. You have the disease.
See,
and
that,
I was like, what do you mean?
It.
He said, you know, the disease where you just have to do it.
That's right. You have it. And
okay,
you know
wait. Like, which disease is this, the writing bug or writer's block?
No.
The writing bug.
The writing bug. I think, you know, writer's block comes in and sort of dips its nasty little taint over all of us now and then.
Yep.
Well, if somebody reads my Night Owl column, they'll understand about me and writer's block. So we'll understand that. But
I'm
going to
look it up, Bennett.
Oh, please,
no,
enjoy.
Bennett, can you send me
the other question I have for you, and other authors are going to answer this next month in the August issue of Night Owl, is what authors inspire you, Tracy?
You know, there are a lot of authors I just love reading. So when I was a kid, I read this great historical novel called Whom the Gods Would Destroy by Richard Powell. And it's set during the time of the Iliad and the Trojan War, and it is just a fantastic story with vibrant people and great characters, great action. And, of course, this is a classic tale, fundamental tale embedded in the Western civilization and in our consciousness, I believe. So I love that. I read Frank Yerby as a kid. When I was very young, I read a historical novelist named Anya Seton. But right now, currently, the people I think who are really writing beautiful fiction are Daniel Silva and Sue Grafton. Sue Grafton is just one of the best prose artists going.
Bennett,
stay on while we're talking. I want to do one more thing here. I want you to talk about the Botticelli affair, but Bennett, stay on. Is that okay?
Sure.
We'll have Bennett stay on. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Talk about the Botticelli. I want you to talk about that before we run out of time.
Well, first of all, Fallen. So the kinds of questions that I was trying to answer with Fallen is, when everything is stripped away, what's left? This is a tale of being stripped down to the utter basics. Everything has been destroyed, and what matters? Also, what's the farthest horizon of love? How much can love forgive? And I felt like, you know, this idea of the apocalypse, it's really in the zeitgeist right now, because 2012 is coming up, and I have these friends who think that in December of 2012, the government's going to shut down the food supply and they're going to declare martial law. And I don't know if they're right, but that's what they believe. So that was Fallen. But the stakes are high. It's the first in a trilogy. So someone emailed me this morning. So I love Fallen. I love Emma and Arthur. When is the next one coming out? And it's the first in a trilogy. And it's going to take the three books for Emma and Arthur to get together. So then the Botticelli Affair is actually a vampire book. God bless vampire books.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a whole thing.
It's kind of a pot boiler, but what I was really interested in is vampires. I'm not as interested in vampires as I am in the fact that they don't have a soul. So what does it mean to have a soul? What is this thing called a soul? So the Botticelli Affair is an art history mystery vampire romp. It's everyone has a good side and an evil side. And my main character, Layla Cambridge, is an art forger. She's got kind of a dirty mind, a good heart, and a wicked way with a paintbrush. And she is – so what if the one thing you're really good at is something that's not really ethical? Like, she's really good at forging the old masters. And so I was having fun with a lot of these ideas in the Botticelli Affair. It has a playful side, but it also has a dark side. So it's a lot, you know, because she's looking for her missing father, and if she doesn't find him, he's going to be killed. So that's the Botticelli Affair. I have a really sexy half-vampire. So she gets like she's very attracted to this half vampire named Bolingbroke, but they can't get together because he'll kill her if they do.
See, the good thing about vampires and all of these things now, it really lets your imagination go where it needs to go as a writer. You can just about go anywhere, and, you know, and that's a good thing.
So is Layla going to be my new favorite pain in the neck?
Layla should be. If she's like this 6-foot-tall, red-headed, you know, horn dog. She's just fun, and, you know, she knows how to pick locks, and... she's done some naughty things, and she's trying to lead a good life now, and she's very, you know, keeps trying to hit on Bolingbroke, and he has to keep telling her no. And
it's probably
know,
very
she's
fun
a lusty
to write
wench.
Don't you think you have
so
fun to
let,
it?
Let
like
me
you.
Ask you a very silly question. Writing Layla.
No
yeah, yeah, well, writing Layla, and your husband has supposedly read your books. Has he said, God, this is us, or this, oh my God, this is something that we did, or whatever. And does that ever reflect in your work? I know every author writes themselves somewhere in there.
Well, I think that novels are like, well, I'm pretty frisky for my husband. If you haven't seen his website, you know, my husband's gorgeous. He's really, he's got a better body
yes.
than any of these models he sculpts. So he gets tired, and I'm like, take a vitamin, lie on your back, I'll do the rest. So I have the frisky side that Layla has, but, you know, novels are like dreams. Everyone in them is you. Everyone in them is the author.
Do you think that?
Good
though?
Answer.
I don't feel that.
I like that.
Yeah, I don't feel that. I go the reverse of me. I don't really, but I think that you're probably right, but I probably, you know, because, well, I do so many different things. I'm not sure. I haven't really, you know, because I do scripts. I do different types of, you know, I really do a lot of different genres. And the thing is I don't feel that it is. It comes from me, probably, you know, in my mind, but it's not, and I don't really feel that connection with it. But after I write the character, sometimes I will say, like, oh, this is what Elaine would do, or what, you know, because in my mind, after I have already known this.
Well, it's,
you know,
it's like, the question here is, how much is perception and
yes.
how much is projection when you take
right.
in someone, like, you know, there might be, you know, my main character, Bolingbroke, in the Botticelli affair, he's like half Spock and half, like, other men I've known, you know, real men, fake men, you know, fictional men, a little Rhett Butler thrown in there. So, you know, but it isn't really Spock and Rhett Butler and, you know, that high school teacher I thought was hot. It's also me, my perceptions of them. So here you have
yeah.
this figure ground play between perception and projection. So that's kind of this mushy, nebulous area that really fascinates me, and that's why I think that novels and screenplays are like dreams, and everyone in them is you, because, you know, you're the god of, the author's the god of that universe.
Well, I have a client that she actually wrote a script on her dream, and it is a fantasy, you know, it's a, you know, it's really good. Her name is, you know, I've had her on the show, and, you know, Risa, and she's also, you know, on TV, but she woke up with their whole script in her head. And
really? Man,
yeah,
I wish
yeah.
I could do that. Every page is agony for me.
I think that's Stephanie Myers. I think she did that, too. She woke up and, you know, I don't do, you know, right, it's agony when you start sometimes. But actually, it does, somewhere along the line, it just makes a circle. I like that. In the, you know, when I'm writing, I like the pieces to fit. I really don't like to walk out of a movie or whatever, because I'm into, you know, you read books, I go to like a million movies. I don't like to be unsatisfied. I like to walk and feel like I knew something that, you know, I know something that's going to happen to them later. Like, I even like when they do, like, 1 year later, just to see what happened. You know?
Yeah, well,
I don't.
I like the jagged edge to think, who was it in the box? Was it
yeah.
Jeff Bridges' character
well,
or
that,
not?
Although that's an incredible movie. That one, they all, that's another thing. The production companies will say, oh, I'd like a movie like Jagged Edge. And then we're going like, did you know Jagged Edge was going to be that way? I mean, you don't know that. See, that's the thing. It's still a mystery of which movies make it and which movies don't. That's the fun of it. And they're taking away
well,
the fun.
Well, that's why I think it's that way with books, too. I mean, I think that's why I think the publishing companies are kind of, the traditional companies are sort of barking up the wrong tree when they're looking
yeah.
for this algorithm to turn every novel into a bestseller.
Right,
I think
right.
it's really problematic. I think, like take Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
In some ways, they knew it was going to do well. But in other words, I think that the global phenomenon it became must have surprised them. But it just happened to hit a chord. This idea that Jesus was married and had had children and the church knew it and was hiding that, that had been kicking around for decades.
Passover plot in 72.
Dan Brown did, pardon?
The Passover plot in 1972 used the same material.
Exactly.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Tracy. Go ahead.
No, that's it. It's just that it just this story just sort of hit the chord at the right moment.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. It's the right time, right place. Maybe,
What I disagree with you, because he wrote a book before then, and, of course, they made it as a sequel, which is Angels and Demons, was the first book. The first book flopped.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I want to stay with these characters.
Right.
And, you know, the Da Vinci Code came first, and Angels and Demons second. And Angels and Demons, of course, reap the benefit of Da Vinci Code. But I'm waiting for, and I don't know if you've read, The Lost Symbol. I am amazed with that. I would love to see that in the theaters. But some of the things that they do in that in the book, I would make the film an R-rated movie, but it's a fascinating film. I think it would be great.
Well, right. You know, I mean, I think they have to, well, like, you know, what Tracy and I were talking about before, they have to take some chances. Nobody wants to take these chances that they need to take, because that's why it's so much more exciting when you take a chance on some new author and then they make it. It's so exciting. Like, you know, I mean, they have it for, you know, American Idol. It's, you know, all these people that never would have really been anywhere, now they have all these tapes to go out, and they can go out and tell people what they do. And, I mean, they're getting a shot at life that they never would have had. And same with books or movies. I mean, let's have some new people get out there and really let, you know, let it happen. That's what I keep saying. And I'm so, that's why I love that you came out. Tracy, you said everything perfectly. You know, it's like really good, because, I mean, I didn't realize what you were going to say, but I'm so glad you said all of it. I mean, because it is so true in this world of what's happening. And Bennett, I knew you two would get along very well. That was for sure.
I had my halo on when I came, so I'm doing well.
No, I knew. I know, because I know what, you know, I know.
Do you have any more questions,
Bennett?
I'm sorry?
Bennett,
do you have any more
questions? Go ahead.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes,
okay.
I do.
All right, before we go,
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I just...
Oh, Bennett always...
I have like six questions, but I was trying to be nice. Okay, who's your... other than your own work, who's your favorite vampire?
My favorite vampire?
Yes.
Good question.
Thank you. I have a couple. And please don't use Dracula.
No. I guess when I was a kid, I liked Dark Shadows.
Bless you, my dear. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that too, but I don't like to do an age thing here, but that, you know what, that was.
I mean, I was pretty young when Dark Shadows came out.
Yeah, me too. But it was really,
especially because I'm only 20 now. No,
very right. It's that was so, you know, and when you look at it, it's on the Sci-Fi station, and it's really funny because you look at it, and you go like, oh my God, it looks so weird now. I mean, but then it wasn't.
What's scaring me is Johnny Depp is going to play him in the upcoming movie.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That would be interesting.
It's going to scare me to watch Johnny Depp play Barnabas.
Well, yeah.
Barnabas Collins. That's right.
Yep. Wow. This is all okay. You know, I think this has been great. You know, Bennett. You know, maybe we should tell. You know, we're having a show also with the Colonial. We should talk about that for 1 second. The Colonial?
Oh, I do want to talk about the Colonial Radio
okay.
theme. Right,
I'm
going
to talk to Tracy, right, about one other. Yeah, Tracy, I will have you on again, and Bennett will come on again. We're going to have this. We'll have another show.
Oh, good.
Yes, we will definitely
have
another show.
I like Bennett's questions.
Bennett is great with questions. He really is. And that's why we're
I used to do another radio show a long time, not that long ago, but long ago. And basically the host just sat back. I'm not saying Marcia does that, but the host sat back, and I just ran the show.
Yeah. Well, that's why I met Bennett
show.
A while ago. He came on a show, and he's been helping. You know, he really does. He tells me things, and I actually listen to him because I really think he knows a lot about this. And but he introduced me to Jerry Robbins, who's coming on Colonial. He has the radio stations on Sirius. He has audio of them. So, Bennett, you want to just talk about that for 1 second? Tell Tracy what we're going
to
do.
Let me tell you all to do something. To go today to Amazon.com and buy yourself a copy of the dramatization of the Martian Chronicles. If you haven't got it, you should. The Colonial Radio Theater has outdid themselves. They've done good work. Please don't misinterpret. They've done Father Brown. They've done other things.
They've done a ton of things. They've done a ton of things.
But when they did the and they've also done Vincent Price Presents, the comic book on audio, which is really, really interesting. But what amazed me and what does amaze me is they have taken all the stories from the Martian Chronicles and just made it so palatable, made it so wonderful. And you really can almost reach out and touch these things.
So it's a radio dramatization, Colonial Radio Theater on the air?
Yes.
Audiobook?
That's them.
Okay.
That's
okay.
them.
And, curious,
and Jerry Robbins also does a one. Let me just say this before I forget. Jerry Robbins also does Perry Mason. And he directs, produces, and stars as Mason, but it is a fully dramatized production of Perry Mason, the original classic book.
I heard.
Not the Raymond Burr, not an old-time radio. It is modern-day radio. It is the books themselves, and they are done so well, and I love them, and I can't just... They do serious radio, but they also do... in December, I just heard the Perry Mason, which will be out in December, and I love it. Oh, God. It is the way crime drama should be played. Now, television has destroyed crime drama and things like this. This is the original classic books, and
wow.
They are wonderfully
done. Well, I love
done.
Ray Bradbury. I read a lot of Ray Bradbury as a kid.
Well, then you'd like Sirius. I mean, because he does, it's such an, you know, but Bennett, you know, after he mentioned him, I went like, oh, I listen to Sirius, you know, and it's so interesting, you know, and that's, you know, because on my show, as we all know, whatever happens, happens, which we know that already. Anything can happen on this show. But I knew when I was having you on, we're going to have you on yourself, because I knew that you have so much, and I so appreciate you coming on, and I'm so glad that... Everybody, and Denise, I'm so happy that you came on for this show. You know, I know you have school on Tuesdays. Now that this is a Friday, but Tuesday, that's why you haven't been on the show.
Yeah, we're good. I'm good today.
I know, we're going to try to find a day when I can, you know, you can be on the shows, you know, and because that would be good because I missed you. I did miss you.
Let me say something before I forget. Hi, Denise. I didn't want to seem like I was being rude.
Hi.
When I usually get on, it's usually the first thing I usually say is, hi, Denise.
Miss that.
Yeah, and Denise always has the option of talking, so I don't want Bennett to think I was mean to Denise, and I didn't. Denise can do whatever she wants.
Boy, Denise has gotten the word in edgewise with me and Bennett.
I know,
Marshall.
But she's used to it.
Okay.
Yeah,
she's
but you love me anyway. It's all right.
Definitely. She's definitely used to this, you know. And, you know what? It's so much better when you don't actually know exactly what you're going to do because then you're not actually boring because you don't know what you're going to do. I know, you know, it's like my daily life. I'm not sure. My husband has to follow
and
me.
I must do a little self-promotion. If you guys go to YouTube, you can look me up on YouTube. I have an interview video with me. And Candy O'Donnell, and it's worth every second.
Yeah,
I have gotten
crazy.
Some lovely comments.
Yeah.
I've also gotten some lovely hate mail. So,
wow, you know, I'm going to have Tracy, I'm going to introduce you to, Candy, because you're going to get along really with her. She's a psychic detective, and she's also
cool.
Doing Healing Hands, which is another thing. That's, we didn't get into all of your things, but that's what she does. And, I'm introducing everybody that I think should meet everybody, because Facebook does not do it. So I'm trying to do it, because I know who goes with who. You know, Facebook doesn't...
You're like a matchmaker,
really.
Marcia.
Yeah. It could be.
Marcia's like the Jewish mother you always wanted.
Right, that's true.
Except if you're my child, you might... Actually,
I'm not
going to
call you mama, okay? But, you know, the one thing about Marcia's show, and I will say this now, I will say this later... Marcia agrees with me on how radio should be done. This, I consider radio, is it's like a cocktail party without drinks. It's great conversation. It's great people just talking and being human and having a good time and not Okay, don't get me wrong, Tracy. Promote the book, yes. But there are times that we're not just talking about the book. We're talking about
right.
many things.
Yeah.
And I love Marcia for doing that. And I,
thank you.
You know, I would love to get, I would love to be on the next show when you're on. I would love to just sort of be a,
oh, yeah,
a thorn
definitely.
In the side.
Definitely. No, definitely. And you can co-host it with me so you can be with Tracy the whole time. Right.
I would love that.
Oh, no, definitely we'll do that.
But
definitely.
Bennett, I'm going to come with questions for you. I'm going to look at your YouTube video and come with some questions for you.
Yep.
Oh,
you
know okay. I have been asked many questions, and what scares me now is when I don't have a picture of me on my Facebook that often, and somebody says, one person said to me, says, you're ugly. I said, fine, thank you.
Oh,
you know, that's ridiculous.
Excuse my language. Am I allowed to say that on
that's
air?
Ridiculous. No, that's ridiculous. No, no.
No, I wasn't saying you, Tracy. I'm saying me.
Yeah.
I'm like,
no,
I don't worry about what people think about me as a person. But if they're going to think about me as anything, you know, think about the words. If the words don't blend to you, fine. Say you don't like it. If the words do, say, hey, great, I disagree with you, I agree with you, I think you're the cat's meow, whatever you want to say it. But at least you're there to listen to the person's words, listen to what they're saying,
right.
and do something about it.
No, I think, you know, look, at you know, that's a good thing about Facebook is about all these radio shows. Like, we don't really know what anybody looks like, and we're still talking to them. We're not looking at their hair, at their makeup. We're just talking, you know, and that's really an important thing. You know, half the people on Facebook, we don't even know if that's who they are. So, you know, I mean, we all know the limits.
It wasn't there a movie about that? I remember seeing
yeah.
the
Yeah,
the
I think there was a Lifetime movie on it. But, you see, I have a typewriter with a monkey as my face.
Yes, you do have that on there.
And the thing I enjoy is I do look like that monkey. It does look exactly
right,
like
right.
me.
I know, and Tracy would like Meg Collins, because she's what? we'd be on for 5 hours then. All right, I'm going to say goodbye because we're going to be better do this, okay, because Denise, it's her first
okay.
time back, and it's in California. Well, it's not, but it's Pacific time. So you didn't probably even eat yet, right?
Oh, it's fine. I just wanted to mention, Bennett, I've got your YouTube interview up in the chat room.
Yes, ma'am, I know. Thank you very, very much.
You are welcome.
It was a good interview. And Candy, she's really, you know what, she's a very good
Thank
writer,
you for too. Having me on. Bennett, thanks
oh,
for
thank
coming
so
on and
much.
Asking questions. And thank
and
you.
And I think, and I really, and Tracy, I will call you and I'll give you Bennett's address and
okay.
have a good weekend. And I'm
you
so
too.
Happy that you said what you said. I cannot tell you. I've been talking about this on all shows too. That's so good. Thank you again for coming on. And Bennett, thank you for
yes,
joining us.
Always on.
Okay.
I'm sorry I was late
okay.
to the party, but I at least came.
Right.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, bye. You were invited. Okay, and thank you to everybody. And I thank everybody for listening to us. And on the archives, I appreciate it because Virginia and I are very happy with how it's going. And Denise, I am so happy that you're here. And I hope that we can get a time when you can be with me on the show because I really love having you. And so I'm happy today.
Well.
Everybody have a good weekend.
Yes.
And
take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome.